Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1083 with Nathan Aries.
Say his carrots. When he actually started off with carrots, but before it wasn't this like clean sumac yogurt, or you know, the octopus was on a, I don't know, say like a fermented cranberry sauce. I'm making something up, of course. I don't know. I don't remember his menu from 5 years ago. But it was just very like shock and awe. Now it's just like, you know, this grilled octopus on a salsa verde. And it's just like, so in Tucson, salsa verde is nothing. I mean, that's our ketchup here. And it is just so clean. He kissed it. Keep it simple, stupid. But it's so elevated. It's so perfect. And literally every single little step within that location right now has evolved to just perfection.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. This podcast was made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. To learn more, head to go.restaurantsystemspro.com. pro.net/restaurantunstoppable. Imagine you had an employee who never called out, kept inventory in line, could spit out sales and cost data at a moment's notice, and saved you hours of work. You'd want to hire that person, right? Margin Edge is the boost in efficiency you need and doesn't add to your labor cost. Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that allows you to seamlessly manage all aspects of your business from one central location. With Margin Edge, you can track food costs in real time, make inventory faster and less tedious, easily cost out your recipes, and get a daily P&L so you always know where you stand. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insights. Once more, that's Margin Edge, MarginEdge.com/unstoppable. With excitement, allow me to introduce to you today's guest, owner of Aries Collective Restaurant Group, Nathan Aries. My man, are you feeling unstoppable today?
Always, my friend. Dude, especially with you
back on the show for a second time. Yeah. And I'm so psyched to be here. The last time we had you on the show, it was episode 681, almost 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was 2019. Yeah. When we had you on the show, just before, I think it was December, I want to say.
Yeah, before shit hit the fan, huh?
Just before the cucka hit the fan.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, for sure. And then you had four restaurants open.
Yep.
With a fifth one coming. Today you're at
seven.
Seven restaurants.
Yeah.
Total restaurants throughout Arizona.
Yep.
Tucson and Phoenix.
Tucson, Phoenix, and newly opened Gilbert.
And Gilbert.
Yeah, you can call Big Gilbert Phoenix, though. Yeah. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, I actually went to that location. It was beautiful. Everybody was awesome.
Thank you
so much. Thank you. So I can't wait to dive in deeper. And this is a kind of like a glimpse of the future of Restaurant Unstoppable. So I'm living in my camper. I'm driving around the country. I'm not just trying to get new people on the show to make an example of. I'm also trying to reconnect with people that were like really great episodes. So like the greatest hits. And I'm going back and I'm going deeper. And I really want to drill down and get as granular as possible with you today. So that's what's going to happen. But before we dive into what the last 4 years has looked like, let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
Well, I guess I got to go back to, I think I said this last time, hospitality is a big word made up of small little actions.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I used that last time, but we still, live and die by it within my company.
Yeah. You know, I think that one thing that's come out of Restaurant Unstoppable since we last connected, and I remember that quote, is that I think in hospitality, there's a host and a guest. Mm-hmm. And I think that society and people will push back on this, like, no, it's transactional, you're in business. But I think people have forgotten what it means to be a guest.
Yeah,
well, what are your thoughts on that,
Steve? It's the world's just crazy now, first off, right. You know, and if you can just get someone in and get them to forget about that craziness for 1 hour, and just really be meaningful behind your actions of when they're in your shop, your house. It just goes so far nowadays because everyone is so tied up in their phones. It's just, you and I were just talking. I'm not on social media anymore.
And your account still exists, for the record. Because when I was doing my research, trying to get collections information, like, you still have your Nathan Arias.
And I try to delete it. The thing never disappears. I've actually have deleted it in my defense. I think my last post was like 2020 or something. I have no clue. But it is so crazy how everyone is just glued to their phones now. And it's just, if you can get them to, disconnect for that little bit of time, it just goes so far. You know, the little touches, wanting to know why someone is joining you today. Why, maybe they're joining you because they just had a rough day and, they want to forget about stuff. Someone tweeted something and then, they're all angry at each other. It's just like, God. Jeez,
it brings out the worst in people.
Oh, it's
weird.
Worst.
It's such a conundrum. It's like we all know how bad it is.
Oh yeah.
But in the same breath, you can say, but you have to do it for your business. If you don't do it, you're missing out. It's such a low hanging fruit to promote yourself and to get business. And it's just like, but what's more important?
Yeah, well, that's why I hired these young, trendy kids to do it for me, you know, for the restaurants. It's just they know how to do all the analytics. They know what's trending,
Right. Well, now we're getting to this point where everything, social media started as a tool to connect people and for like people to have an outlet. But now it's like we're creating content not for people, but for algorithms. And now it's not even algorithms. Now it's not even people creating the content for algorithms. It's AI creating content for algorithms. And it's just like, what the fuck are we actually doing?
Oh, it's a shit show.
It's like, can we take 2 steps back and like ask ourselves, what are we doing? But I think everybody is just so close to it. They're just blindly marching along.
Yeah. I have found ever since I got off.
Man, you really opened a can of worms. Man.
Oh, I know.
Keep going. Sorry.
Like, let's not even talk about restaurants anymore. Let's just rip social media apart right now.
Lose all my listeners.
Yeah. So nowadays I get to go grab coffee with like businessmen and women that I look up to.
Right.
And some of them I probably wouldn't even be friends with just because what they say online is that they drive me nuts, you know? And it's just like, I don't get to see that anymore. I get to connect with them. And I don't know. I find myself liking people a lot more.
you know?
It's like, I didn't see that this, person went on a whole rant because someone tweeted something, it's just like, I want that out of there's enough stress within my life, like why add that layer?
Yeah.
So,
let's leave this conversation behind us and move on to the next conversation.
Yeah, restaurant stuff.
What have you been up to, man? So, what has happened in the past 4 years?
It's been crazy, as it's been interesting, crazy, but it's been definitely lots of, learning moments, coachable moments within my company.
Yeah.
Before
we dive into the details, like, list those coachable moments for me. Just get them out.
One, the coachable moments is, how important sales, capitalizing on sales within your business, because when sales and things are good, you know, sales cure all.
All right.
But
you got it out. What's the next teachable moment?
Connecting with people, wanting them to know that you care about them so they come back and support you. Going over the top for that.
Yeah.
And I'd say the last coachable moment was, it's okay to slow down. You don't need to crank out locations. And because I've been a guy that's cranked out 7 locations in 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's just now I'm like, what? Why? You know?
Yeah.
I don't need to be, I worked under the Sam Fox group for a long time. You know, I get pinned Regan Jasper, as you might be.
We're talking to him tomorrow. Regan because of
is,
you.
Yeah, well, Regan is the, in my opinion, the best hospitality person in the nation. And I'm not just saying that lightly. He is the Sam Fox managing partner, and all he did was hospitality classes. And you can't say Sam Fox Group is not just an absolute force. They sold to numerous different companies, and I think they're partners with Cheesecake Factory. And,
right.
Regan's off on his own now. And so
is Regan's only concept the pickleball concept?
Well, he's partnered up with a group here locally, which, if I got bought out from my last restaurant group for some money, I won't say how much I heard. I would probably just go golfing every day.
Regan
can't do that. Yeah, that's Regan. He's just so good at...
That's his DNA.
He's so good at restaurants.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he's got Corbett's. He'll be doing the Hub.
So is he
playgrounds.
The owner of Corbett's, or is he partner?
He's a partner with the group.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and maybe I'm saying that wrong. I should let you ask him. But
I'm just doing some research for my conversation tomorrow.
You're gonna look. I mean, this guy is like, I talk crazy when it comes to hospitality standards. This guy is next level, and he's just so good. At putting actions or like words into actions and making people drink the juice. And it's just like, it's every time I have a conversation with him, I want to run through a wall. It's just like, he just fires you up,
man.
He's a good guy to talk to. He's a lot of fun.
Words into actions. And what was the other thing you said?
Makes me want to run through a wall.
No. And firing people up. Is that what?
Yeah. He gets them to drink the juice.
Drink the juice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm making notes for our conversation tomorrow. So I'm going to quote you and say, this is what Nathan said about
between him and Kilpatrick, as being my mentors, I watched these guys go from, couple of locations to, Regan was hundreds of, lots of locations. And Scott Kilpatrick went from, having 2 raw sushis to selling it to Benihana, and then in going purchasing sauce and expanding sauce aggressively.
I think he's somebody that you also put on my radar to reach out to.
Scott's great.
He's in Phoenix?
He's in Phoenix now. They sold sauce, and then he is now the president CEO of Genuine Hospitality, which is the VIG and a couple other concepts. So really, that's another great guy.
Yeah, and this is what you're hearing happening right now is why I'm living in a camper. Because what would happen before is I would start talking to people like you. And this is the last time I was in Arizona, I probably would have connected with these gentlemen, but I had to leave.
Yeah.
My flight was, I had to catch a flight, So now the hope is that as I'm talking to people, hearing doing this research, these people aren't looking for media. These people are behind the scenes. These are the restaurant people we need to learn from, not the people looking for, vanity metrics and looking to get on TV. Fuck those people. No offense to them. I mean, that is a path that you can take.
Yeah.
But that is the 1% of 1%.
Yeah.
All restaurant owners can't do that.
No, and you and I are, it's fun that you're going to be here because I'm going to bring you to Rolly's. I'm going to bring you to Pico de Gallo, El Rustico. I'm going to show you.
Getting rid of me, man.
Oh, dude. I'm making a very bold statement right now. Tucson has the best Mexican food in the nation. I don't care. Oh. I'm talking about Sonoran style Mexican food. You can't beat it. I mean, we have El Charro, which is the longest running Mexican restaurant in the world, or in the nation.
You said the landlord was cool with me parking my camper here. Did we get indefinite?
He better make it indefinite or I'll be breaking my lease.
Right. So let's go back to your story, man, because I want to drill down into what's happened. So, do you want to, we had that list that you just dropped on us, the teachable moments, how important sales are within your business, connecting with people, and it's okay to slow down. So do you want to pull these out in terms of what's happened over the past 4 years, or do you want to just go through the lists?
Yeah, let's start on that. Let's start on the first one there. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, with the sales.
Yeah,
I mean, that one's pretty easy to dive into. 2019, sales are going through the roof, expanding. Sales cure all. You can run a couple of points high on food cost or labor costs, and it really doesn't matter.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, 2020 hits, and you have no sales.
Right.
And then you're trying to get creative.
Right.
Then you're trying to generate sales. And then you're, and then, you know, the year after, yeah, you have crazy amount of sales, but you don't have help to get those sales, you know, keep the sales within the door.
Wait, the year after. So you're saying 2021,
yeah.
Because you have plans, sales, but keeping them, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So you had a bunch of sales come back in the door.
Yeah.
But you weren't having help. Because your labor shortage was super short.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is, getting product through your doors to actually sell those items was hard.
Shortages.
The shortages. And, you know, just these past couple of years were so crazy of the sales spikes and dips, that you have to be able to know that you got to capitalize. So ever since these, like my past, like, say 8 months, we are so tight on cost of goods. We don't mess around. I mean, we were always good at cost of goods.
That was a big part of our conversation, is that you were talking about compete and how you had all this data and you like mastered it and you were really drilling down and you had it down to a science.
Yeah.
Has it progressed beyond that?
Oh, we're nuts. Now we're nuts. I mean, if we are running above a 22% total all cost of goods, which is unheard of.
Wow.
In the restaurant world for the most part. You know, when I first started off, we would run, you know, 28s, 26s, you know, like even 30 sometimes.
All restaurants or just prep and pastry?
All our restaurants. Wow. We drill way down. I mean, it's hard for here at Flores because we have a grocery component. And if there's one thing I have to say is don't open a market. I never knew margins were so small in a market.
Well, when I last, I think we last spoke, and then yeah. I reconnected with you after the pandemic. And
yeah, like, we kind of call each other once in a while. Yeah,
and you're like, I'm opening a market. And I was like, oh, are you? I thought, like, for some reason, I thought you got out of the restaurant game.
Yeah, no, no. But as you can tell, 70% of this location now, it's a 12,000 square foot location. 70% of it is now a restaurant. You know, it's like, wow, there is no.
So was this market space before that we're sitting in now?
We were looking at doing a, you know, event market space in the section we're sitting right now. But there's no margin. You know, you see Whole Foods making a lot of money, but they're doing, you know, $1 million weeks.
Right.
You know, when you're doing a, say, $100,000 period in a market, I mean, 2-3% if you're lucky. And then we're not a big fish within the market world. So if we're trying to get product and, you know, we're trying to get the same trendy product that Whole Foods just all of a sudden discovered, they're kicking you out to supply Whole Foods.
Right.
But in the restaurant world, we're one of the larger local companies. So they, you know, Sysco treats us well, and they make sure our trucks get there on time, and we don't have to really fight.
Right.
It was a very big learning moment in that sense too. But you know, back to sales.
Yeah, 22% cost of goods across all locations, average.
Yeah, we drill. I mean,
what does drilling mean? Like, really paint the picture of what drilling means.
So
for your organization,
what we will do, my business partner Kim. Kim Kaiser, who is just a monster. She's great. She's
met Kim, right?
You've met Kim, yeah. She started off with me as a server, and she's literally she's my backbone. She literally runs this company. But Kim Allen, who also is my brand chef, we will take our P mix, our product mix, see what's moving, what's. We'll run the report on the product mix of, you know, what has changed pricing wise due to shortages or seasonality every single quarter. And we will drill down on which product has or which item has exceeded, you know, the quote unquote limit of, you know, cost of goods allotted to keep our number that low. So we really just drill down every metric we can.
So when you drill down and you find this product that's exceeded the cost of good allowed, what happens?
We'll see if it's in the top 10 of moving items. will okay, so is this item just, is it something we can tweak within the recipe? Is it
what do you mean with tweaking the recipe?
So say it's just say if it's like roast beef, yeah, is a perfect example. No, tri-tip. So we had a steak and egg sandwich. Tri-tip went through the roof during, you know, the past couple of years. All meats really have. One meat that no one was really touching was, you know, kind of like almost like a roast beef. Well, you can say roast beef, the round. We would say, okay, let's test this out. Let's marinate it in chimichurri. Let's see if we can soften the meat with marinating
sous vide or whatever.
Yeah, and just different cooking processes, yeah. and it worked out, and no one blinked an eye when we changed it, and it was still a quote unquote steak and egg sandwich, but we just made our cost go from, you know, say the meat was $1.25 on the plates, and now all of a sudden it's 65 cents,
right? So,
you know, and it, you're just really, you just, trying,
you just
to get,
increase
creative,
your margin by two.
Yeah, and you got to just continuously do that. You know, the only item that we've never changed on our menu that has just exceeded our cost is our duck confit hash. We can't take
it off.
Don't
touch that.
Yeah, yeah, you can't.
Don't touch that, yeah, man. Yeah. I had that the last time I was here.
But again,
it was so good. Do not mess with that.
But again, what you got to do is you have to create, you know, our French toast. Our French toast, our bread's baked in-house, so we're not buying bread outside. So our cost on that is significantly lower than buying.
So you're also using vertical integration.
Yes. Yeah. So, and yeah, but what I'm saying, too, is we make the menu outweigh the higher cost items. So if the duck hash is selling, say, 20 units a day, we're selling 60 units of French toast to even out that cost of goods, that theoretical goal.
Got it. I'm thinking of somebody who I just talked to today, just before this. She messaged me, and she just said, I just discovered your podcast, and I just want to say thank you. And she sent me felt like a book email. I was like, I'm not going to read this whole thing. Like, so I called her and I was like, hey, like I got your email. I think we should just talk. Like, I'm happy to like offer some advice. And, she took over a restaurant that had been open for 30 years. They're in their 33rd year. I'm just trying to listening. And like one of the things that she was talking about, she's still working on Excel spreadsheets for everything. Right. Which is fine. I mean, not really at today's age, I feel like, but I was like, how big is your menu? Yeah. She's like, it's massive. I was like, what, like you're, so back to this idea of PMIX,
yeah,
of like really looking like what's moving, what's not moving. How can we shed the dead weight, you know, mm-hmm, and just focus on our top hits.
Yeah. And it's always scary to change something.
Yeah.
You know, I was terrified, from going from, you know, during the pandemic, I went from three menus, a breakfast, lunch, and brunch, to an all-day menu, and just really going from like 40 items down to 22 items, just to make, you know, ordering easier and making sure that product was staying in. And it was really scary to do that.
Yeah.
And you think everyone's going to fucking freak out.
Right. And I want you to speak to, I think, Courtney, I hope you don't mind me saying your name. I want you to speak to Courtney right now. Like she's afraid. What she said to me, she's like, I'm afraid to take things off the menu because I don't want to disappoint anybody or upset anybody, I think is what she was getting at. Like, what is the message to Courtney?
The message is they will forget about it if they love your location. If they love what's going on inside the four walls there, they're not going to. Of course, if it's like your signature item, you can't take it off. But I guarantee she could probably, let's just say that she had 50 items. Let's just make up a number. I guarantee she could get down to 30 and she would not see a single drop in sales. I just don't. Me personally, call me stupid, I don't know. But, you know, going from, I have had a drop menus down and, you know, you just kind of, it's just like, it's now in today's day and age, it's so hard to get product consistently that you gotta take that stress off. And then also cost. Things are going up and down, up and down.
It's more to manage.
Yeah.
And it's just tying up inventory, like money on the shelves.
Exactly. So
in terms of like, you know, keeping cost of goods down when you limit the menu and like you focus on your greatest hits, how else does that benefit your operation?
Well, I mean, you got less time prepping goods. You've got, I think my chefs give me frozen French fries once a quarter to try and blind taste me on doing, you know, pre-IQF French fries, but I still want to punch them. I want to soak them. I want to double blanch them. I don't know. It's kind of on the kill me now list, you know, and they always, there's certain things that you can save a lot of time on prepped items. You know, we still prep everything in house. We're not buying a lot of things already cut outside of Sysco. I mean, you'll say like sweet potatoes. We could get sweet potatoes, but we still chop them up, you know, like, so it just saves a lot of time on prep goods.
Yeah.
If you cut down your,
so how do you find that balance between, you know, like, I think there's a lot of people that have like this badge of pride of like all from scratch in house. We make our own mustard, we make our own ketchup, mayonnaise.
And they got to be impactful things too. I used to make my own ketchup when prep first opened, and we also used to cure our own bacon until the health department shut us down on that. It's just like, people don't care if you make your own ketchup. I mean, they really don't.
I think it's I get having this idea of like quality and integrity, and I respect that. But at the same time, it's like, how much of this has to do with your ego?
And, you know, once I had to get my ego out of the, you know, kick my ego out, because I, you know, coming up under some big names, I wanted to be out there and, you know, I wanted to, you know, make the mentors happy and, right. You know, I don't know. And then after I got over that, I was like, oh, shit. Like, dude, you know, honestly, Heinz ketchup is, you know, or Portland's, whatever, that Portland's best ketchup, that stuff's amazing. Those ketchups are 50 times better than any ketchup I could ever make, right. You know, and it was just, you know, and the consistency of having someone come in and make the ketchup exactly the same every single time. And,
yeah. How much does ketchup cost?
Oh, it's minimal.
Pennies?
Definitely not more than
per order, right?
Yeah, it's very minimal. You're putting me on the spot right now,
but you know what I'm saying?
5-6 cents, maybe.
Right. So, how much time goes into making ketchup in house?
It's not like an earth shattering amount of time, but again, is it impactful? You know, like it's, let's say, like, you know, making your own dough for pizza,
right?
Yeah, like we have our own dough here. Of course, you know, that's impactful. People are seeing this gorgeous crust, you know,
right. And especially, is it a sourdough or is it like a starter or
it
like
is,
low
yeah,
ferment?
Course, yes.
Slow
yes.
ferment.
Yes.
So that's a selling point
exactly.
Because now it's like, this might be easier on your stomach,
yes.
You know? So like now there's like a actual benefit, a draw.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's impactful and there's a story behind it. Who cares about
how old is that starter? Right, like
oh, it's
that's
so old.
That's
Ours
all the
old.
Stuff that goes into selling it. So there's a story behind it too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how we got on the tier of ketchup and
I think the point that I was trying to make was that like say it takes 30 minutes to make ketchup for the week, right?
Yeah.
And you're paying somebody $20 an hour real soon to do that.
Yes.
So okay, so you just spent $10 on top of all the cost of goods to be able to. I mean, I don't know. I'm just playing with numbers, but like at the end of the day, like how much? Where can you shed labor, where can you shed cost of
exactly.
goods? And if you do that over and over and over and over again, it compounds and it's success by 1,000 cuts, not death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah, and also you gotta kind of play with that too. You're gonna learn it through your menus evolve. You know, I've never known anyone that's come out just swinging with the perfect menu. My favorite restaurant in town right now is Tito and Pep. They're the only place that really kind of gets James Baird nominated via restaurant wise. I mean, we've got some other ones here in town, but they're really on top of their game right now. And his first menu to his now menu, I mean, it's nothing alike. His first menu, I'll say this, and I love John a lot. He knows he's my favorite restaurant now. And his first menu, I was like, I don't see the hype. Now I'm like, dude, this thing has just evolved.
How has it evolved?
I mean, it's just so simple and clean and crisp, and it's perfect every time.
So what was it before?
I mean, it's just exciting. It was a chef opening a restaurant and, you know, sous vide this, that, you know, and I'm just not into that type of stuff. You know, everybody else, you know, a lot of people in Tucson were, but now the hype behind Tito and Pep is real. It is like national hype.
So what did they, I guess I'm missing exactly what changed. What was it before that was, you're like, meh. So like, how has it evolved that you're like, meh?
Well, it's just, you know, like say his carrots. He has this dish on the plate now. When he actually started off with carrots, but it was like, but before it wasn't this like clean sumac yogurt, or you know, the octopus was on a, I don't know, say like a fermented cranberry sauce. I'm making something up, of course. Right. I don't know. I don't remember his menu from 5 years ago. But it was just very like shock and awe. Now it's just like, you know, this grilled octopus on a salsa verde, and it's just like, so in Tucson, salsa verde is nothing. I mean, that's our ketchup there. And it is just so clean. He kissed it. Keep it simple, stupid. But it's so elevated. It's so perfect. And literally every single little step within that location right now has evolved to just perfection.
And I think what happened, there was a, I think maybe like, I don't know, early 2000s to like late 2010s, just before the pandemic, where there was like this evolution where everybody was just trying to shock and awe with the menu, right? Yeah. And like this whole, like this, there was this movement where everybody was like, I think what was happening, this is my theory. You know, and I beat it the shit out of James Beard and Michelin Stars and all this stuff and Food and Wine. And I think these publications really fucked up our industry, if I'm being honest, because we were looking at these publications going, that's what it takes to be successful. Over the top, extravagant, crazy, like creative foods with really high costs of good, like, you know, really high, like expensive things. Right. Yeah. And everybody was out to get a James Beard or a Michelin star or get recognized for this amazing food that they're doing, but at the expense of not really real, like recognizing the cost of doing food like that. And I can respect trying to pay homage to tradition and to try to do sustainably sourced food. And I'm not saying we stop that. Mm-hmm. But take some of the labor hours out of it. Take some of the, you know, like the amount of time and energy that goes into doing that. Like, I think there's a certain responsibility that we have to be fiscally responsible and what's going through your mind as I'm sharing this.
So yeah, and to feed off of that, in you know, I'm talking Tucson base. Tucson's way different than Portland, you know, in the sense of, let me break this down for you.
Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. So like Portland, Oregon, you know, their minimum wage and our minimum wage are pretty much identical.
What is that?
Well, it's going to be 15 minimum, but now they're looking at taking away the server tip credits. You know, so servers will be $15 an hour as well. Now, before anyone gets all fired up, I'm not saying no one's not worth this. We've been paying above 15 before it was cool to say pay people above 15. We pay really well. So what I'm trying to break down here is you know, we have the fourth highest hospitality minimum wage, and that might have changed recently, but last time I was talking with the Arizona Restaurant Association rep, you know, fourth highest minimum wage, but the GDP of Arizona, of Tucson. It's like, you know, You can't just go out doing all these crazy things, and you know, you got to capitalize on where you're at. So I'm specifically speaking to Tucson. You know, I just don't think that shit works in Tucson, where you're fermenting this or doing that and sous vide this. I don't know what the trendy stuff is nowadays. I have the young chefs around me to keep me trendy, and I taste and kind of drill it, you know, drill down cost and, you know, labor hours behind it. We like to keep things a little more simple within my company.
So yeah, keep going.
No, so you know, it's kind of like it. There's got to be this effort, this mindfulness behind the menu items here. Again, specifically to Tucson, Phoenix can get away with it. You know, Bacanora, Valentine, and all those guys. There's so much surrounding wealth up there that, you know, you can charge, you know, $25 for a tart, whatever the hell they're selling up there. But they can crush that. Here in Tucson, speaking to Tucson terms, it just doesn't fly.
Right. Well, I think that's part of the issue, is that we see all these organizations and we aspire to be like those certain companies that are getting all these this media. But we forget that those companies are serving the top 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
And that there aren't enough restaurants to go around that can serve. I mean, there are, but there's too many restaurants that are trying to serve that demographic. And that demographic can't support all those restaurants. So, like, I guess the message I'm trying to get out is, like, I'm not trying to say I can respect doing quality, right? But at the same time, be realistic and be responsible and put a restaurant owner and put your ego aside and do what you got to do to offer security to your people, you know, and to have a fiscally responsible organization. And I get into the industry, like, so one organization I want to make an example of is Industry East in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Okay.
I recently had these guys on the show, and they're killing it. Like, everybody loves this restaurant. Guess what they're serving?
Huh?
Hot dogs.
Dude, people love hot dogs.
You know, but the point I'm trying to make is but what they do really well is they fucking love the shit out of their customers and their people. And I think that the point I'm trying to make, and they're also known for their cocktails. So they're a cocktail forward concept, and they serve hot dogs. They also don't have a hood in their kitchen, so they can't really get away with making a lot of stuff. So the point I'm trying to make is if you have one thing that you're really good at, and you know, and you're known for that thing, for them, their cocktails in Manchester, and you deliver it with amazing hospitality and an incredible team, and you love the shit out of your people, like you love on them every day, your customers and your employees, like you can do really well, and the cost of goods on hot dogs is really low,
and they're making
money, you know, pushing alcohol, like. I'm just saying, like, put your ego aside and be a smart business person.
I would agree with that, you know, and I don't know. I agree with putting the ego aside. I didn't put it, you know, the first couple of years, I didn't put it aside. And then, you know,
it takes maturing a little bit.
It does. Yeah. You get humbled real quick when you got investors upset that they don't get returns.
Yeah. If you want to win a James Beard Award, go work for somebody and being part of a team that's doing it. And maybe some of these owners could be better about recognizing the team, helping them get there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I agree. So I don't know. It's not my forte, you know. I'm through the world of Sam Fox and Scott Kilpatrick, and they make really fun, upbeat, hospitality driven concepts with simple food. If you look at a Sam Fox concept, it's not earth shattering. The food is done very well and simple.
I went to Culinary Dropout in Gilbert.
Yeah.
The day after going to Prep and Pastry. And I got the rainbow trout with vegetables, and it was very basic. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not over the top.
You don't need that. And the atmosphere, though, is what keeps you coming back.
The servers were amazing.
Yeah, they look cool. They're all dressed in normal clothing.
They gave a fuck.
Yeah, they do.
Like, I was looking at the menu. I'm trying to be healthy. Mm-hmm. I eat exorbitantly sometimes when I'm on the road, because people are like, here, eat this, and I'm like, I can't say no, I'm here to share your story. So when I'm eating on my own, like, I really try to make healthier decisions to balance it out. And I was like, I like savory, and he's like, this guy's like, I'm a chef in my part-time, I'm a personal chef, like, tell me what you like. And like, he was like taking his time to like really understand me and to like steer me in the right direction. He gave a fuck, you know. And like, that's the hard part, is getting those people to give a fuck.
That's again, Regan Jasper.
Yeah.
You know, Regan Jasper really driving that to the team members within the Sam Fox group.
Yeah.
You know, now that Regan's not there anymore, but they still have that. They get everyone to drink the juice.
Right. I like to say, behind every great organization is a great person. And, and like, that person is the standard who's lifting people up.
Yeah.
And that's why our mission statement is to change the world by transforming restaurant owners. Yeah. Because if it starts with you work, if you want to be a successful restaurateur, it starts with you, not your restaurant. It's a you.
Fully agree. It's the way it starts at the top. If you create this culture of, everything is, doom and gloom, and the glass is always half empty. Shit, it's always going to be half empty, you know?
Yeah, let's get back to your story. This has been a lot of fun, but I'm getting sidetracked.
I like talking to you, and there's a reason why
I'm bringing you back on the show for a second time. So we're talking about how we got here. We're talking about how important it is to the coachable moments, how important sales within your business, cost of goods. We talked about 22%. We got some granular details around how you're doing that. Do we really get granular about how you're doing that? Like, is there like a routine or a process?
It's really reviewing, every period, drilling down, menu items, what's moving, what's not moving.
Yep.
Setting alerts within our compete, restaurant 365 system.
Yep.
Saying, okay, hey, this item has exceeded our threshold of pricing. If it changes within 10%, we get a notification. We call Cisco up and say, hey, why is this going up in price? How long is this thing? Is this just a now thing, or is this a forever thing?
Right.
You know, we always have quarterly meetings with Cisco reps. The regional manager, who's now kind of center of the plate guy, is been one of my best friends and my old manager at Raw Sushi years ago, so I got a good rapport. We don't really like to go and beat up our purveyors because we look at it as a partnership. You know, the more excited they are to walk into our locations and see us succeed, the easier our job's going to be to get information out of them. You know, you don't want to go and be like, well, Shamrock can give us this for 50 cents less a case. You know, it's just like, why? You know, you're doing it all wrong. You know, so keep that great relationship. And when we renegotiate contracts, it's so much easier for us to negotiate because we're on each other's team.
Yeah, don't destroy a good relationship for 50 cents a case. Yeah, that's like an employee going like, well, they're going to pay me 25 cents more an hour if I go over there. But are they going to give you opportunity for growth?
Yeah, exactly.
Or is it a work culture?
Yeah, there's, you know, and, you know, really it's what I guess I'm trying to get down to is it's make your job easier in your relationships when you're, because restaurant is already so hard that, you know, make certain times, you know, like drilling down the menu, make it fun and exciting. Bring your new young chefs in.
How do you make that fun and exciting?
Well, this is, you know, I actually like, so here at Flores, we're doing a menu change. And I have three really talented younger chefs here that are all, I think, are going to move up within my company in the near future. And I, you know, my brand chef said, hey, let them run the menu tasting this week. And I said, here's your guidelines. This is what I'd like to see, you know, because I'm not the guy that gets in the kitchen anymore and weighs out the ingredients and comes up with I give a guideline and an idea and I let them kind of execute and tweak as we go along. Yep. But that's exciting for them. You know, for me, that used to be exciting 7-8 years ago.
Right.
It's just not exciting. It doesn't float my boat. You know, what gets me excited is loud ambiance, full houses, the lights being at a certain level at a certain day of time.
I don't interview many single unit operators anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not exciting for me. I get it. So I think, I can't believe you, we're over 40 minutes of recording time already.
Jeez, man. Look at that.
Time is flying.
This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way.
We are back, and so we had some teachable moments, you know, the coachable moments, I think is what you said. And I want to dive into the next one that you mentioned, which was connecting with people. What did you mean by that?
Connecting with people, you know, one easy example I have right away was when guests were coming in and supporting us during COVID, we were doing packages of like dinners and stuff, we were, you know, giving thank you cards within their, you know, to-go bags and genuinely handwriting thank you. Just, I mean, we would say thank you for supporting us. Thank you for this. This means a lot. And when people were coming back, we were trying to make those moments really special. And if they were so worried about COVID, we would reserve a table all the way out to the side for them, making sure that they knew that we cared about what they wanted. And, you know, it's been really hard to get, you know, team members, you know, kind of back into a place prior to COVID of, you know, drinking the juice and being really excited of hospitality. Our team is great, I will say, like through the whole Aries Collective organization. But it was a struggle when the labor shortages were going on to really get people, you know, team members excited and motivated to make people happy and go over the top. And, you know, now we're at this point where it's you're going to have some bad days, but let them know, you know, like, hey, you know, I don't know. We just
changed before and after the pandemic? I mean, was it just fewer people who were as passionate about the industry?
Yeah, I think a lot of people just kind of left the industry. You know,
yeah.
Amazon started hiring drivers for $25 an hour.
Yeah, they get the gig economy that you're competing with, and
yeah.
then you know, what else are we competing with?
It's come back around.
I think OnlyFans is a big competition for us too. How do you compete with that?
I don't know, man. I mean,
you make good money on there.
You can make a lot of good money.
Anyway,
but if you don't make a lot of good money on there, it's, you know, that's out there forever.
Yeah, exactly.
So I definitely, you know, just going over the top and connecting with people and letting them know that, you know, you really care about, you know, them coming in and thanking them for coming in, because restaurants are an emotional buy. When the economy goes down, the first thing to leave, restaurants. I mean, like, literally, you're not going to go out and spend money on restaurants if you're tight, if you can't pay your rent. I mean, you're going to go to the grocery store and you're going to kind of put something together that will be significantly cheaper.
Well, it's interesting. I think that, like, we're also, like, getting really good at being efficient as people. Yeah. And I think that maybe the going out to a nice restaurant and sitting at a bar and spending, you know, $200 on a meal with one other person or more is probably, when the economy hits bad times, like, that's the first to go. But I still think people, even in a bad economy, people are still very busy.
Yes. You know? And, you know, during a bad economy, you know, drinks start flying.
Yeah.
So you're also, there's an argument both ways here on this, but definitely, you know, the every day, every Saturday morning, you know, breakfast on a Saturday, you know, I've got three kids now. That's the first thing to disappear when I feel like things, you know, shit's going to hit the fan. Luckily, we get to go to one of my spots or something and, you know.
Yeah, there's still, I think maybe certain segments of the industry are affected, but people still need to eat. And
yeah,
there's fewer and fewer people cooking at home today.
And what I am trying to say is when times get tough, this is an emotional buy.
Right.
You know, it's a buy that people can tighten up their wallets, and this disappears fast. So you just want to, you know, when times do get tough and people do come back in, like, they're coming in, not anyone can crack an egg. It's fucking easy to cook an egg. It's really easy to make an omelet. There's only so many trendy omelets you can make before everyone kind of catches on that you're literally offering the same thing. Us and Snooze do the same exact thing. Snooze does pancakes. We do French toast. You know, there's a little local breakfast spot called Baja Cafe here in town, and they crush. They're one of my favorite breakfast spots. And I'm not just saying that to give a random shout out to a breakfast joint. They do a really good job. But they do Benedict's, and we do, you know, breakfast sandwiches. You know, there's only so many different ways that you can make a Benedict different from someone else.
Right.
So the hospitality and the meaningfulness behind it needs to be there to convince someone to come back and come back again, opposed to going somewhere else. So that's why we really drive that hospitality, because anyone can crack an egg. Anyone can just throw a breakfast restaurant open and put on some, you know, hipster music and, you know, make it loud and make a fun, inviting atmosphere and, you know, make a scrambled egg.
How do you drive hospitality? What does that process look like to be intentional, to empower your people to lead with hospitality?
Hire hard and manage easy. So we really, really focus on the interviews. And we want team members that are planning on leaving us. It sounds weird. We want people that are, you know, going to nursing school to leave us one day, and we want people that are just excited, you know, have family, and they do this, they're doing this to, you know, provide for their families, and they're just excited, they're happy. You know, it's easy just to hire someone just to fill in a role, but if you actually get to connect with that person prior to bringing them in, it goes a long way. And one thing that we do, is a lot of spots do, is we do a very short stage, which is they come in and hang out with us for 45 minutes. Nothing crazy.
Does the stage come in the process of being hired?
So it's after the first interview.
Got it.
And then they bring them in for a stage. And what we do is, you know, 45 minutes, and we tell them, hey, this is an opportunity to interview us as much as we are interviewing you. We want to make sure that you love what we are doing, because we are crazy about this. And if you don't love it, not a big deal. You know, yeah. we'll recommend you to some other restaurants or some other people. You know, don't just come here because you just need money. Come here because you're excited about what we do and you're excited about making people happy.
What do you do? What do you tell them you do to get them excited?
We tell them we're just nuts. I mean, we are over the top nuts when it comes to, you know, going over the top for someone. You know, I don't know. Someone proposed at to their fiance or their girlfriend at Prep and Pastry. So, you know, we made them when their wedding was coming up, they still came to Prep all the time. When their wedding was coming up, we made them a pancake wedding cake and didn't tell them. We just delivered it to them, you know, the day prior. Or if a regular's family member got hurt, we're doing a whole catering for them. Not because it's market. We don't go out there and market it like we did it. We just want to let them know, like, hey, we really care about you. Yeah. Thank you.
This is the whole foundation, the premise of Unreasonable Hospitality, Will Guidara's book, they're doing at 11 Madison Park.
It's like the 50 cents, like where they put, like they would go pay for people's parking while they were enjoying, so they didn't have to get up and leave that experience.
It's just the little things that you wouldn't.
It's so simple.
Do. Yeah.
So it's so simple.
Like the example I like to use, I was working at a golf club or a private golf club during my study at when I was still taking classes for hospitality. My internship was at a private golf resort, basically. And I was managing the food hut on like the sixth hole.
Yeah.
And I would get a list. What was cool is we almost had like reservations because you could see people's tea times.
Yeah.
So like I would see who was coming and I would take notes on what they would order every time. And I'd have it ready for them when they got up. But one day I noticed that they were skipping the front nine and they were starting on the back nine and they were only going to do half. So I was like, oh man, like so-and-so, like they're not going to hit my hole. They're skipping this hole. So I got I knew when he would be on like the eighth hole or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I drove with their things waiting for them. Like little things like that.
Yeah, that goes so far. There's so many times that my team members have been invited to weddings or, you know, like birthday parties from regulars. And it's so cool to see.
The unexpected, the show that you care.
Mm-hmm. Again,
and that you're paying attention.
If you haven't read Unreasonable Hospitality or Setting the Table, you need to go read it right now.
Yeah.
Unreasonable Hospitality is it has taken first place in my mind of the best restaurant book. You know, Setting the Table is still always up there for me.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, those simple examples of actually truly caring about why people are coming through the door. You know, again, it's a crazy world out there. It's a shit show.
You don't need to be 11 Madison Park. So I think one of my constructive criticisms to that book is that I think people see what they're doing and they're like, how can I compete with that? But, you know, 11 Madison Park is also serving the most wealthy people in the world.
Yeah.
And they have these crazy budgets and it's not a cheap meal to go to 11 Madison Park. So my point being is like, don't hold yourself to those standards. Really at the end of the day, it's just doing what's unexpected in mm-hmm. at your point, your price point. Like what you're like, there's things like you can still put 50 cents in the meter at like a average restaurant.
I'm looking up a restaurant name here in town. It's actually, so it's my favorite restaurant now, and I should know how to say their name.
Dude, you don't have to worry about that. I'm the worst at screwing up names.
Well, I should
worst
know this
offender
one.
Right here.
What's it called? It's like La Buendita. It's on Stone. They opened this little, like, imagine a Prep and Pastry just done Sonoran style, and they sprinkle when they give you your food. I got to give them a shout out. There it is. Hold on, I found it. Yeah, La Buendia. So Buendia Breakfast and Lunch Cafe. They literally, when they drop your food off, okay, they sprinkle happiness and joy on your food as a seasoning. And it sounds so fucking stupid, but it just makes my fucking day.
What is it, like cinnamon and sugar?
No, it's nothing. It's literally it's this like salt shaker that's filled with like little colorful balls, like little cotton balls inside of it. And they just say, we just want to sprinkle happiness and joy on your food. We hope you have a lovely day. And it's just like, get the fuck out of here. I love you guys. And, you know, I've become good buddies with the owner. He had no clue who I was one day. And he goes, he told me the story of how they started there. And he said, you know, this place called Prep and Pastry was a huge inspiration of ours. No shitting you. And he had no clue who I was. I was just in there just randomly eating because I was, you know, I want to see the new up and coming spots. And I love supporting up and coming spots. And he was telling me the story, and I was like, well, you know, I'm Nathan, you know, I own Prep and Pastry. He's like, oh my gosh, you know, now I go in there, they're just like, I brought my wife last time, and he's just, you know, just like, hello, you guys are just, you know, such an inspiration, just so friendly. And my wife and I literally were like, every day, like, this is the best fucking bread. This is the best restaurant in Tucson other than Tito and Pep.
Yeah.
I mean, but Tito and Pep, that's another thing, is they don't sprinkle joy and happiness, but everything is so spot on. They're so like, just, they're so meaningful behind saying hi.
Yeah.
They actually mean it. When you walk in, how are you doing today? It actually is like, it's like, oh, John actually wants to know how I'm actually doing today, you know? And John and I have become buddies over the years, but even before him and I knew who each other were, you felt that way. You know, it's just, you gotta have that intention behind it, and your team has to have the intention behind it, because if they're just ignoring the door, as you can tell, I haven't had to get up to the door, you know, because the team, you know, you just really just, guys, just, this is crazy times, you know, and let's let people know that we appreciate them coming, hanging out with us during these crazy times.
Yeah, I want to make an example of you in two ways. First, you could be, I think this happens when somebody opens up down the street and they're like, oh, they feel threatened.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
That's such a stupid, like, fucking way to think.
Yeah. And I want to make an example of you for not being like that, but embracing it and choosing to be excited about it. And,
well, competition makes you better. We are in a million person city here in Tucson. Tucson fluctuates between a million people. Like, summer hits where, like, half a million, and then winter comes and it's like, oh my gosh, you can't, it takes like 40 minutes to get across town because so many people are here. But competition should make you better. You know, when Snooze opened, we didn't care. You know, if Chop Shop's opening across the street from us, we don't care. It's because we know what we do. You know, it's only going to elevate us to make sure that we're on our game even more and more.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't. La Buendia. Well, Buendia opens, and, you know, we're rooting for them. Like, I hope they beat us for best breakfast in Tucson. If anyone was ever to beat us for the first time, for best brunch, whatever, if anyone was to beat us, we would hope it was them. And I would send them the biggest bouquet of flowers and so much champagne to celebrate for them, because they deserve it. Yeah. They are so genuinely, like, nice.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't think that way. You know, you shouldn't just, someone opens across the street, it creates more synergy.
Yeah.
And you should be excited.
Yeah. So I want to make an example of you for two reasons.
See, we keep going off.
That was
on
the first
tangents.
Reason
yeah.
is that, like, don't, like, choose to embrace the competition and go further with the competition and love the competition. Yep. You will go further if you take that approach. If you come at it from a place of fear, anxiety, anger, how dare you open up in my community, you're not going to go as far, and that energy does not serve you or anybody, for that matter, your community. The second reason why I want to make an example of you is I full-heartedly believe this, that the restaurant industry has the ability to change the world. And I think that in that story, you prove my point, because they got inspiration from you.
Yeah, well, and, that's very nice of you to say.
You know, and, like, we have influence is the point I'm trying to say. Like, when we treat our people better, our guests and our employees, people notice, and it inspires them to be better themselves. And the restaurant industry touches so many lives. Third largest industry behind the government and healthcare, and the most passionate, impactful ahead of healthcare and government, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We have influence. People pay attention to what we do, and we touch people as soon as they come into the workforce. Mm-hmm. 16, 17, 18 years old, we set that fucking bar.
Yeah.
And if we know that and we're aware of it, and if we lift each other up, we will lift up communities, and the fucking world will use us as a benchmark as to what it means to be a business owner.
Yeah, it's, you know, not even just being a business owner, being a nice person, you know, just being a better person.
Yeah.
So, and I agree. It is the restaurant industry is in a special, you know, a special sector that it could change a lot of things.
Will change. Not only are we touching lives, but we touch food. Food is life.
Yes.
Food is identified as a commodity, which is weird because a commodity is like the most basic form of something. Food is on the same level as salt, which is technically a food.
Yeah.
Gold, silver, coal.
Yeah.
Raw materials.
Yeah.
But with the exception of salt, food was once alive. It was a plant. It was an animal.
Yeah.
And it's all connected. We're a part of that system.
Yeah.
You know, so not only are we the most human industry, but we're so closely connected to the greater picture of life.
Yeah.
You know, we literally are serving life. I mean, I love this stuff. And like this, like I must sound like a broken record because I bring this stuff up, but I think it's important to remind people why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it's in it. And by the way, since we're on a what you do, congrats on all the success, my friend.
Oh, thank you, man.
Last time we hung out, it was phones. Yeah. We got fancy cameras here.
I had iPhones recording. Yeah. Now I have. I don't want to say how much how much all this stuff costs because I'm living in a camper. And I'm afraid I'm going to get jacked.
We've changed because I used to cuss a lot more too. Look at this. We're just evolving.
Well, yeah. I mean, I still
cuss, but me too. I got little kids. I need to stop.
They're just words. Like, it's not the end of the
F word is my comma.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I have to get it out here because I can't say it at home. My wife will kill me.
I won't hold you back, man. Yeah. Whatever. Be you. So we were talking about connecting with people.
Yeah.
You said hire hard, manage easy.
Yeah.
You start with so it's a really slow hiring process. You hire the first interview, then you have a stage, and like what really paint that picture for us real quick before we move on.
Yeah. So we really connect with them during the interview, see what they do, what they like, if they'd be a great fit with the team, especially invite them on back. You know, to do a stage, kind of walk through the location with us with the team member. That team member will tell them kind of what we do, how we operate, what's the highs and the lows, you know, be brutally honest with them. And then we connect with them again and just say, how'd you feel? How'd you like it? And a lot of people, and we've actually had people be like, man, you guys are just too much. You guys are too intense.
Yeah.
We don't want to deal with
paycheck,
this.
Not a cult.
Yeah. 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 And you know, that we buy them a meal and say, thanks for coming in. And hey, we appreciate the honesty and, you know, we don't want to waste anyone's time. We don't want to waste their time. We don't want to waste our time. And, you know, because, you know, you come on in, you're going to take some tests after, you know, it used to be a 6-day training, or actually it used to be like a week and a half.
Well, that was my follow-up question. What does the training look like there?
It used to be a week and a half. Now, you know, rising cost, we've streamlined it and we made it four days with a fifth day possible, if needed. But a lot of information, testing, and, you know, making sure
what tools are you using to deliver that information and test?
Well, I mean, we just make our own test.
Got it.
So we're just asking, you know, questions about, you know, what's the ingredients inside our jam? You know, which items are gluten free, you know, blah, blah, blah. Cause if you're not going to take the time to memorize that.
Are you giving them tools to memorize?
Oh yeah, of course. We give them all the notes.
Okay.
You get all the notes all day. Your first day, you're standing on the expo line looking at every single menu item coming out the window and we're marking it off twice, making sure you get eyes on it.
I'll be honest, this is where I'm weak. I've never been good at memorizing, like real memory of things. I'm more to speak from my heart, not my
well, and that's why we're not drilling down like, okay, you know, make sure that you know that there's mustard inside the dressing on the first day. But you gotta know that, you know, there's it reads as a raspberry vinaigrette.
You gotta
know if you can memorize the menu as it reads, which should be pretty easy for the most part, then you know, you can get by. It's confidence, tableside confidence is number one. When you go to a restaurant and the team member has no clue what they're selling, I mean, any team member, if they at least know what the restaurant or the menu reads, they can get by.
What did you mean by manage easy?
Well, you want to really take the extra time of training. Really make sure you're getting all the information and set the team member up for success. So when they're done with their training, you're not having to, you know, fix hiccups that they've are of curd during their first week of serving on the floor, or even saying like if you don't train them really really well, then it could be 3-4 weeks down the road and they don't know what the de confit means, and that's just that's hard. That right. just makes your job harder, and you don't want that. It's just that's manage easy right Got there. It. So
did something happen over the past 4 years where, like you said, this was a coaching moment, connecting with people, hire hard, manage easy. Like, what happened where like you had like the shift?
I mean, it was drilled into me from Regan Jasper and Sam Fox years ago. Raw sushi back in the day, raw sushi was a large party. It was just a concept that you went and drank at and had some good sushi. And it was, the training was not as intense as like Sam Fox restaurants. So it was drilled into me long time ago, but really, the coachable moment was really appreciating, when we're talking about, people coming through the door and connecting. It was just really, going over the top for hospitality, but actually meaning it, not just going through the motions. Like, I felt like we would do a lot of good hospitality things prior, but after COVID and when we really appreciated that those people came back to support us. So that's where I kind of was meeting with that.
Got it.
Yeah.
So so we talked about the coachable moments, how important sales within your business are, cost of goods, things like that, connecting with people. Was there any other element when we were talking about connecting with people? Was it strictly with the people you're hiring? Was there more to that?
No, I mean, you got to really make sure that you connect with your team. It was no secret, as that we went through some crazy times during COVID. Yeah.
Were you not connecting with your team? Did you lose sight of that connection?
I did. I did during COVID. I was so stressed. It's not like I was running through yelling at people or anything, but I wasn't connecting like I was prior to COVID. I was just so busy and so stressed.
It was
all
consuming. Like everything that I worked so hard for could be gone.
Yeah, but not even just past that. It was, we moved from a little 2,000 square foot spot to a 4,200 square foot spot. Then, we still had a lease to fulfill at our old location.
Which was why the bakery existed, right?
Exactly. So then we relaunched a new concept there. Then we opened Scottsdale, 2 months prior to COVID. We remodeled Commoner 2 months prior to COVID. It was just a shit show. It was just, I was stressed. And, during those times, it's no secret that unions are trying to get into restaurants, and a really big union tried to come into our concepts. And
during the middle of the pandemic?
Yeah.
These assholes. I know you're not allowed to say a lot because obvious. I mean, I don't want to cause trouble for you.
Yeah.
But I'll talk shit about unions all day.
This is the thing is, I was very honest with my team. And I said, and I think they respected this. I'm not going to sit here and grovel.
Am I allowed to say that you're going through a lawsuit? Is that too much?
No, you can say that. Okay. I won't go past this. But what I will say is, I was very honest with my team. I wasn't going to grovel and beg them for their votes. It wasn't happening. I handed out 2 letters. Most companies usually hire big law firms to come in and tell the team why this is a terrible idea. I didn't do that.
Why did they target you?
You were the perfect size. I think I'm the perfect size. I had 400 or 500 team members, and I'm big enough where it's worth the squeeze for them, but I'm small enough where I can't fight back. They also messed up by, I'm very hard-headed, and once you start running around going on the news telling lies about me, I get even more hard-headed.
Yeah.
So I stuck to my guns, and I refused to let them just kind of run around. And
refuse to let them run around.
Just do things that I thought was unfair.
Yeah. How does a union even infiltrate a restaurant group?
There's different techniques, and again, I don't want to get too far into it because I don't want... there's a lot of rules you got to follow.
I know. I don't want to get you
apparently
in trouble.
And I don't want to sound like I wasn't supporting my team members that wanted to do that back then. I will say they got 7 votes out of 80 possible votes at one location. So clearly it was not in the, my team did not want it. They get union favorable team members to get within your organization and start you know,
spreading the cancer.
You just kind of, I don't want to, I am not calling it a cancer.
I am not,
you know, it was crazy times. It was just,
here's the thing about unions. And this is not for on the record. This isn't Nathan speaking. This is Eric Cacciatore speaking. Yeah. I haven't found a group of people who are in a union who don't abuse the fuck out of the organization they work for. So here's the unions came out of a time where they were needed in during the industrial age where employees were being fucking abused, horribly abused. They served their purpose. They kept employers honest, and the pendulum has swung in a direction where if you were to compare an average business today to the working conditions back then, we don't even know how good we have it. Like the world has changed tremendously from the world that the unions were birthed out of.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And really, you know, certain industries, I still look at them like, okay, you know, whatever. I've never thought one way or another via them.
I think they served their purpose.
Oh,
and then they kept industrial organizations honest.
I will say this. The main guy that, you know, from that union, him and I get along. Like, we actually talked. I've told him off the record. I was like, dude, you guys did a great move. You were strategic. Good work, man.
Right.
You know, like, but, you know, at the end of the day.
I know that work for unions abuse the shit out of those organizations.
Yeah.
Which, like bad, like steal.
Yeah.
From these organizations, and like there's all these benefits they get, and they push those benefits to the envelope, and it's almost like a me versus you culture. It kills culture.
Well, and that was the only thing that was worrisome with me was, you know, I didn't want it to be where I came in and I felt like I wasn't connected with my team, because we offer mental health days. We, you know, most restaurants, when you get a mandatory 40 hours of sick time, we allow them to keep accruing them year over year, so they can use it for vacation. Because, you know, we feel mental health is just as important as covering when you have the flu or the cold. So we do a lot of great things. We're looking at a future, you know, we're finally looking at a 401k program. We offer insurance. So we do a lot of things for a small company. We were paying $15 before it was cool to say pay $15.
Right.
You know, and like, so it was just, you know, it was, I will say, and we should probably change the subject so I don't get in trouble here. You know, I was, it really boosted my confidence when they didn't go that route. It was just, you know, it was just it taught me that I had to connect with my team more.
Right.
You know, because I know my team members' kids' names. I know if, you know, their wife is, you know, pregnant and expecting, or if their partner's going on a vacation. I just know this stuff, and I liked it. And it's not because I, you know, cheesy. I want to know. I like to know what my team's doing. And I don't know every 400 team members' personal life, but I go in and I love to see them. I truly do. I love driving up to Scottsdale and talking with the crew up there because they've been up there forever. And I love genuinely asking them what they're doing. How's nursing school? How's this? You know, there's a couple of team members up there that, you know, I go up there excited to see if they're there just to connect with them. Just because, you know, that's cool. And it's a lot of fun.
So my hope, what I'm trying to do with this podcast is to empower people to do the right things so unions don't need to exist. You know, if a union is an example of a system, a process, a procedure, it's a protocol for employees to be treated right.
Yeah.
And I think that systems and processes are necessary, but change doesn't happen as fast when you implement systems and process because it keeps things kind of rigid. If we want to change the world, the culture is going to be the thing that does it.
Yeah.
The choice to do the right thing for somebody and to create a world of equity, like, that's a choice, and we can make things happen much faster if it becomes a choice and a cultural change.
Yeah.
Do the right fucking thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you do the right fucking thing, where does the union come in?
This podcast is made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. Everyone who attends this live event will get a recording of the Restaurant Systems Pro 4-day How to Run a Profitable Restaurant from Soup to Nuts recording. This event costs $2,500 to attend live, and you'll get it for free. Head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. That's go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. Picture this. It's the end of the month and you're working your way through a shoebox full of invoices and manually entering costs into a janky spreadsheet that is being held together by bubblegum and prayers. And after hours of eye-stabbing tedium, you realize that your numbers don't even match. Oh my God. We've all been there. But it doesn't have to be this hard. Margin Edge can free you from spreadsheet hell. That's because Margin Edge is a complete restaurant management software that automates invoice processing and shows you your food costs and labor in real time. Just snap a picture of your invoice and Margin Edge takes it from there. Margin Edge will process your invoices automatically with line item detail and combine that information with sales from your POS to give you real-time reporting, including a daily P&L, up-to-date plate costs, and updated inventory count sheets. Stop spending hours to get numbers you're not 100% confident in when you could spend minutes and have accurate, real-time food and labor costs. Visit marginedge.com/unstoppable to learn more and to get a free monthly restaurant sales report packed with exclusive industry trends, data, and insight. We are back, and the last thing that you said you wanted to talk about when we kind of started today's conversation, you said it's okay to slow down. Like, is this all connected with this idea of like the pandemic forced you to slow down and be more present with your people?
Yeah, and also, you know, in my world, what I'm learning as I get older and I've got three kids, less is more, you know, making sure that standards are met within the restaurants, and when you're just opening, you can't keep those standards up there. You got to build your team and grow, you know, kind of like, you know, low and slow, like with a barbecue place, right? You know, and that's just for me. Some people, you know, like I've seen some of my buddies grow some restaurants and they're just crushing, and you know, standards are always met high. You definitely, they're not like the originals, but you know, they're still pretty high and they're going. And you know, of course, coming from the Sam Fox Group and Scott Kilpatrick, you know, watching those guys still hold standards pretty high. It's just, it's not for me anymore. I would like to, you know, focus on two concepts, you know, that I'm going to grow and not come out with a bunch of different concepts anymore. And it just sounds so nice, you know, just to slow down.
So prep and pastry, I'm assuming, is what one of your focuses. What's the other one?
You know, we're doing a deal with the city where I'm helping the city revitalize a location, and I'm doing a place called Stravenue Social, which is like a social house.
So this is a new concept.
It is. Now I'm partners with people on this and with the city, and it's going to be like six bowling lanes, nice. Golf simulators. Big kind of, you know, imagine like a culinary dropout with more entertainment value to it, not just beanbags and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd like to focus on that one after prep and pastry. And I want to keep Flores as is. I want to keep Comner as is. And August Rhodes will keep supplying bread to restaurants, but I'm not going to expand that either. You know, it just, less is more right now. And getting prep into the Phoenix market, I think more to the Phoenix market, and just solely focusing on a prep and pastry expansion opposed to doing concept. Because before, when you and I met, I was running and gunning. I was like, man, I had like five concepts in my pocket. I was ready to go.
Why is that no longer the option for you?
You know, I think just my sanity, honestly. It's just, you know, I want things to be perfect too much. And it just was stressing me out. I was like staying up till 11 o'clock at night, seeing who's doing what. What are my favorite restaurant people doing? You know, what are the new trends coming online? And it was just, God, I was just
I can kind of relate with that. You know, as somebody who, when I started my podcast, I think there were, I could count them like one hand how many restaurant podcasts there were.
Yeah.
And they, and it was some on that those num like those podcasts, like some of them weren't even producing content anymore.
Yeah.
So it was basically me and like one or two other people. I can't keep track of how many restaurant podcasts there are now. It's like more than I can keep track of.
Remember, you're the first one though.
I'm not actually Foodable. Paul Barron had the first. He beat me by like 3 or 4 months.
No, I meant when you research it on Spotify, you're like the first one that pops up. Which
is
cool.
I try not to pay attention to that because I don't want to.
Well, I'm paying attention for you.
Thank you very much. I try not to pay attention to what other people are doing because I'm like, am I doing it wrong? Like, they're really good. And like to your point, like I really try to love those people. When I see a new podcast, I'm the first person to say congratulations. Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever have any questions or you need any help, like don't be afraid to reach out.
Competition makes you better.
Yeah, and I do feel like if I'm being honest, threatened that you know there's more and more people. But at the same time, as soon as I start to have those feelings, mm-hmm. I recognize that they're not serving me, and then I try to remind myself if there's more restaurant podcasts, that means that more people are realizing that there's a resource for them in podcasts in the restaurant industry, and they're gonna find my podcast if they get turned on to restaurant podcasts.
Yeah,
because like it's like you can't do a search for one podcast and not find my podcast.
Yeah.
So the way I look at it is, all these other restaurant podcasts coming to the market means that there's more people who are restaurant people looking for restaurant podcasts.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the mindset.
But also speaking to slowing down, I mean, you and I talked before we went on. I said, hey, how's this going? You're like, I'm kind of enjoying what I'm doing right now.
Right.
You know, you're really focusing in on expanding the podcast.
Slowing down.
Yes.
Really paying going deeper into these communities, not having to leave.
Yeah. And like before when I first started, when I was 30, you know, I'm 40 now. Jeez.
Do you dye your hair?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
You son of a bitch. You have a full head of hair. And
I'm going to take a moment right now. The one thing I got going for me in my life is my hair. And I'm in a solid midlife crisis right now with my hair. I started growing out a mullet.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. It's coming. Like, you just give me another couple months. I'm going to
have the option.
Dude.
I'm thinking about growing my hair out and just doing a comb over to make it cool again. How do we get this right? What were you saying before I started talking about your 20?
When I was 30?
Yeah, 30 or 40 years old now.
And coming up under Sam and Scott and seeing them just do all these big things. And I was like, I'm going to be, you know, I want to be the next Sam Fox. And you're going to chat with the owner of Postino and Joyride.
Yeah. Lauren Bailey.
She is a beast. She's, you know, her and I've met her once. She probably doesn't remember me, but I remember her because she's, you know, such a name.
She's got a lot of energy. I did a quick Zoom call with her. And I was like, holy shit, this is going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. She's great. Actually, one of her old team members is a business coach for me now. Eric Henderson, if anyone wants a really good restaurant business coach, this guy has changed my life. Like, honestly, he has changed my techniques of meeting cadences, everything. So a plug for him.
Say his name one more time.
Eric Henderson.
Is he here in Phoenix?
He's in Phoenix. He used to work with Lauren Bailey forever. I mean, he expanded her locations for her, and I don't know the exact title he was with her.
Introduction. Let's get him on the show.
Dude, he is legit. He's a restaurant consultant, and he's so busy, and I am honored to have him in it. And I'm not even afraid to say, you know, I've got this business coach now, because I was losing my way during, you know, COVID and everything going on. I just needed my confidence rebuilt back up, you know, and he's a good sounding board for me. And
how do you build your confidence back up?
You know, he would just give me suggestions during tough times. He's been through what I want to go through, you know, with Postino expanding and, you know, bringing in different financial backers and stuff. And he's teaching me how to get there. And that would be my goal. You know, my goal is to one day find I'm mom pop fundraised, which is really stressful. And I would like to, you know, one day have a VC firm or just even a local group behind me to expand. So then I'm not just funding everything through my company. It's so stressful.
Right.
So, but anyways, Eric Henderson, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
So he's great.
So we got here just talking about it's okay to slow down.
Yeah.
So slowing down to you means focusing on less.
Yes. Just focusing on
doing more, fewer things better.
100%. And, you know, because of course, yeah, I just said, you know, focusing on less, but I'm opening this new spot. But yeah, the thing is I want to focus on Prep and Pastry and Stravenue Social. I want to expand those. Those are the two I will expand. I won't be doing more concepts past that.
Well, I've seen this, and I can't remember all the names of the folks. I can see their faces and I know their concepts. But I think, again, it was just this idea that like young chefs, young restaurateurs have like these big dreams. They have their heroes that they look up to, and they want to achieve what these people achieved, and they go for it out of the gates. Mm-hmm. And it's just like it takes years to build up to the point where you can do a restaurant that's that level of high touch. Yeah. And then you see a lot of these, what they do, they go for it, and they learn that like I should open a restaurant that makes money so that I can fund the thing that I've always wanted to do.
That's one day I will live in Eagle right outside of Boise.
Right.
And I will have my little breakfast spot where no one will know who I am. And it will be my spot that I will, like, I won't care about cost. Right. I won't care about profitability. I won't care about any of that. I will literally just be there for my passion. And, you know, that's what I'm working towards.
Right.
You know, you can do those things. And, you know, there are some people that, you know, like I'm guessing I'm speaking for him and I hope he doesn't mind. But, you know, John Martinez over at Tito and Pep, I think he is actually living his passion and making money. You know, I mean, he's just crushing it. But that's very rare, you know, very rare. You usually kind of to do something that well executed, you know.
The only way you get there is by living your passion first, not chasing the money.
Yeah.
It can't happen the other way, I feel like. You have to, like, do it for the reasons why you're doing it, not overextend yourself,
yeah,
and let cash flow determine your growth.
And also people. Overextending yourself. That's one thing. That can drive you crazy. Like, I would stay up. I would wake up in the morning, you know, with the craziest anxiety. And I still do right now. You know, I still do. The craziest anxiety thinking of what I have to do. I have this laundry list of things to get done, but then you're filling your day with things that don't even help you get stuff done because you're so nervous of getting that done. And
do you ever wear an Apple Watch?
No, I took it off.
Was it
too much?
Were you sitting still and it was like your heart rate is above 120?
Well, it's
right
not
now.
Even that. It was okay. The 300 notifications I get from text messages, phone calls, emails, you know, everything. It
you
was
can
just
turn
like,
those push.
I know, but then why even wear it? You know, right. I was like, dude,
well, what would happen to me? It still happens. I'll be sitting. Although I should say this, and maybe I shouldn't say it, but it only happens when I'm stoned. If I'm super stoned and I'm sitting still, I'll be like worrying about stuff, and my watch will vibrate, and it's like your heart rate is over 120, and you don't seem to be doing shit right now, are you?
Yeah,
like
that's funny. Yeah, no,
one of the reasons why I'm trying to cut back on smoking.
Replace it with coffee. That's way healthier, right?
Yeah,
especially for your heart rate.
May or may not have an addictive personality. I'm trying to.
I have I'm crazy addicted.
Yeah,
that's my new addiction. You know, pickleball. It's like. Yeah. I'm obsessed. Anyone out there in the restaurant world that wants to challenge me, I'm up for it.
I won't challenge you, but I'll play. You want to teach?
Oh, let's go tear up some Udall tonight, you know?
Nice. man, I'm really enjoying the conversation. I want to make sure we get some last nuggets out of you before we wrap up. So we're talking about slowing down. I mean, one thing I haven't asked you, like over the past, like pandemic aside, let's talk from 2022 to today,
mm-hmm.
year and a half, right? Biggest challenge, what was it?
You know, other than the one thing that we talked about, that we won't talk about again.
Wink,
you know,
wink, nod, nod.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, you know, just the overall, the cost, rising cost of everything, just in general.
You're keeping your cost of goods down at 22%. What's your labor cost?
Well, that's the thing, is labor's going up so much in Tucson, in Arizona. It's going up so much that you're really having to drive down your cost of goods to accommodate, you know, the 23-24% labor cost now. So you have to get very creative, and we still want to keep that high, hospitality driven, you know,
high
mentality.
Human touch.
Yes, yeah.
What is your plan as we go into the future? You know, like the in case anybody hasn't figured it out, the Restaurant Unstoppable format is past, present,
future.
Where, how'd you get here? Where's your business today? Where are we going? So let's talk about where are we going, right? So what are you doing in your business today to get ready for tomorrow? And i.e., labor cost is only going up.
Yeah. So in it, you know, when I just saying, hey, slow down, not creating new concepts, I don't consider this a new concept. I have really started, you know, talking to potential new partners of mine of doing a coffee shop, like a drive-through coffee prep and pastry.
So when you say potential new partners, you're talking about business partners.
Yeah, business partners. Yeah, yeah.
What kind of partners are you like targeting?
You know, like say like a VC firm, like venture capitalist firms, or you know, large group investment.
So you're thinking like a QSR version of prep and pastry, that it's like the greatest hits in a drive-thru.
Yeah, and I want drive-thru. I mean, because, you know, no offense out there if anyone that's not in the restaurant world is listening, the consumer's getting lazier.
Or just more efficient.
Yeah.
Using technology to streamline process.
Exactly. And I really do think that, you know, just watching, you know, drive-thrus. You just chatted with the Salad and Go team recently, right? Salad and Go. I mean, look at them. They popped up how many so fast, and they were just it's so convenient.
There's a downside to that story. So I don't know if you know, Tony Christopoulos, who is the founder of Salad and Go, is no longer with Salad and Go. Did you know that?
I heard they sold.
They sold.
Yes.
But he also sold his shares because of the direction it was going. The direction it was going was they were cutting a lot of the values that he had that started that organization, like the quality of the ingredients. They're cutting too many costs.
So he chose to exit. I would put if I ever did a VC firm, I'd have a quality clause within my. Yeah. He didn't do that, you know. And I'm pretty sure they got bought out for a lot of money.
Oh, he's doing great, but he started Angie's. Are you familiar with the Angie's?
Yeah. Angie's. And also the lobster one, right?
So Angie's is, so the way that he's doing it,
yeah,
and is the way that I would do it if I was opening a restaurant group tomorrow. He has an overarching brand called Angie's.
Yes.
And there is a mission to that overarching brand, and it's to make luxury foods accessible to everybody.
Okay.
And then with all their concepts, they focus on doing one thing really well. So there's Angie's Seafood or Angie's Lobster,
yep.
Angie's Prime Steak, and they're about to launch Angie's Burgers.
Yes.
Which is all the cuttings from the Prime Steak. They're just, instead of wasting that, they're putting it into burgers.
Yeah.
So they're vertically integrating all their businesses, and they're focusing on doing one thing really well out of all their sub. So they have one strong brand.
Yep.
You recognize the Angie's, and then all their businesses underneath that just do one thing really well.
Yeah.
And they streamline the fuck out of process, and they own that one thing.
Yeah.
And if I'm opening a restaurant tomorrow, it's going to be Unstoppable, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Unstoppable Burgers, Unstoppable Pizza, Unstoppable, and own your market and drill everything down to your SEO, to your website, ordering, to like process, to like just rely on system and process to do the thing and put like two or three amazing people in there to run the systems.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They don't even, their drive-through, they don't even like, it's all customer done. The customer places their order.
Yeah.
They put it in the bag and they put it on a shelf and the customer grabs it.
So it's smart.
Well, I mean, so back to the question I asked you, like, what are you doing to prepare for the future with the cost of labor going up? You have to learn how to do more with less.
Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, I mean, that's why I like the drive-through model.
Right.
You have less payroll, yeah, let's say, and you can still have the same amount of sales going out the door. So that's, you know, I'd like to follow their suit in the sense of, you know, doing convenient. I feel like in the restaurant world, there is no, you can't really, other than like Dunkin', I mean, like there's no name that has really gone after that drive-through breakfast. Chop Shop does it kind of, but they're like an all day, you know.
Check it out, Cracked. They're starting out of Northeast.
Yes.
Are you familiar?
Yeah. Oh, come on now, man. Yeah. Stock restaurants, man.
Do you listen to my podcast still?
Yeah.
Because I had them on the show.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But I still listen because I call you after I listen to it sometimes. Yeah. You know, you and I, you would call each other once in a while. And
check out that episode, Cracked.
Okay, we'll do.
Dan and Alan from Cracked.
Yeah, they remind me. Sandwiches. Cracked, I've seen them. And then I also, you know, has Egg Slut moved to drive-thrus yet or no?
No.
But have you seen better buzzed coffee out of California.
But I will say this. I don't think Cracked is in, they're doing drive-thru yet. I think they might have one drive-thru location.
See, drive-thru. Yeah. Drive-thru. Look at Better Buzzed. Better Buzzed was a trendy, hip coffee shop. And then they started putting them as trendy, hip coffee shops with drive-thrus.
Yeah.
And they are crushing Starbucks around their areas.
There's a lot of chains and franchises that aren't doing like they used to. So there's, my point being, there's a lot of turnkey drive-through operations that are like Jack in the Box is going out of business left and right. I feel like, you know,
well, it's so expensive for shit,
right?
It's just, you know, I think restaurant operators like myself and, you know, fellow ones up in Phoenix here in Tucson or whatever, we're learning how to make really good food cheaper. Right. You know, you have to. You have to.
I think part of the process of doing that is by doing one thing really well.
Yes.
So doing one thing really good, but putting all of your resources into doing that one thing really well.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yep.
I agree.
Is that one of the reasons why you're looking to slow down? And I mean, I think the age of the Sam Fox restaurant groups are kind of coming to an end, if I'm being honest.
I don't know. It's easier. I guess because in my world right now, I'm in such that awkward middle size that I hear about people getting acquired all the time, you know, so I would probably kick back at that as like, I don't know. It's almost easier to have a conglomerate.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I guess what I meant, maybe I should offer some more context. I think that the the day of or even like the Union Square hospitality type one-off. Hey, we have 30 restaurants.
Yeah,
the lettuce entertainment.
Yeah, I know what
you're
talking. Yeah,
we have 30 restaurants or 50 restaurants in our group, mm-hmm. and we have 50 restaurants. We have 30 concepts.
Yeah, I got what you're saying.
You know, so to your point, I think we're getting too smart. We're realizing that if we want to be sustainable and make money and create opportunity, we have to create something that's scalable.
Yeah.
And I think it's harder to scale those types of restaurant groups.
Yeah, and it is. You know, like Commoner. You know, let's just talk Commoner. Commoner works in this little neighborhood up on the northeast side because it's a neighborhood joint. I can't just go plop that thing down in central Phoenix.
Right.
You know, I'd have to go find a neighborhood and, you know, you do need scalable concepts. And that's what I'm, and also like with Stravenue, it's bar driven. It's entertainment bar driven. So more drinks will be going through the door. So my costs will be even
more
lower.
More entertainment.
Exactly.
Than
opposed to having a
economy.
Kitchen. Yeah. Opposed to celebrating, you know, an anniversary. You can still celebrate an anniversary there,
birthday.
But you know, yeah. It's just, I don't want as food driven at the new concept. Yeah. I want more bar driven.
So, sorry, go ahead.
No, I haven't had a bar driven concept yet. They're all been, you know, food driven.
And good margins in the bars.
There's a really good margins in those bars.
What's the future of the industry look like? What are you doing to prepare for the future? I mean, I think we're kind of talking about it. You're trying to focus on doing a few things really well and scale those things. Beverage opportunity and the bar side of things.
Yeah, and you know what I've been researching is seeing what AI is going to do in the restaurant world. I mean, I haven't really read anything.
What are some of your thoughts?
You know, I think it's really going to affect the drive-through side of, you know, it's going to eliminate
recognition. Like, here's your order.
Yeah, that, you know, would you like to you know, or even if it's like a scannable, you know, scannable thing and they
or
know
it will recognize that your phone's getting closer.
Exactly. Yeah. That's. I guess the scanning's not AI. But, you know, I think that's huge. You can see that in California with all the minimum wage laws going up. You know, just trying to figure out what that looks like. Because
I think timing. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's gonna. That's gonna change. That's gonna change the industry, in my opinion.
AI.
It hasn't started yet, but it actually has with drive-thrus. But it definitely.
So what are the things that, I mean, is it the facial recognition? Is it the geotagging? Like, what are the things you're talking about?
I'm talking about, like, you know, say, if you go to like quick service restaurants now.
Yeah.
Now you have one person there taking an order, kind of showing you how to use the kiosk.
Yeah.
Because that person's not going to be there after a year and a half, you know, it's going to, they're going to create habits. And
what am I thinking of right now? There's a concept out of Philadelphia, Honeycomb, I can't remember what it's called. I had their director of marketing on the show, though. I should probably know these things.
Yeah.
You get to 1,080 episodes, you start to lose track.
It's a lot of names to remember.
Yeah. but their kiosk. Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about the kiosk, to your point, is like your people, you will never train them to upsell like a kiosk can.
Exactly.
So they're like,
and it's not as awkward.
Right.
You know, it's awkward when someone's like, you know, would you like to add bacon onto that? You know, like just trying to drill more and more onto right. a sandwich or
the
something.
The kiosk will never forget to ask.
Yeah. And it's not as awkward.
People who order this item also tend to order these items, or yeah. they or people who order this item get these add-ons.
Yes.
Oh, I'll get extra meat. Oh, exactly. I didn't know I could get that.
I'm a sucker for that. I go from like a $10 sandwich to a $20 sandwich real quick. Oh, dude, real quick. I never knew jalapenos were a dollar. I add jalapenos to everything.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the company Olo?
Yes.
That's an organization that I'm paying really close attention to mm-hmm. because they are the only one, I think, in terms of combining. So they started as online ordering, right? Okay. And then they scaled their online ordering, their digital interface, but now they're starting to roll the online digital experience into the in-store, and they're rolling out reservations and all this like four walls software, because they have all the data. So they're rolling the data from the digital side over into the four walls experience side.
Yeah.
And I think that is an organization that is worth watching.
Okay. I'll look him up. I'll definitely like.
Yeah. Noah Glass.
Start reading.
I had him
again.
On the show too. The CEO of Olo. And, I mean, secretly would love to work with that organization because I think they're going places.
I don't think it's a secret anymore.
I know. This cat's out of the bag. Man, anything we haven't discussed today? I mean, what is your tech stack? I'm curious. What are you rolling with? You're still using Compete?
Yeah, we're using Restaurant 365 Compete.
Yep.
We integrate it with Toast and Tabit, depending on the concept.
What's Tabit?
Tabit's pretty much a Toast competitor, smaller.
Okay.
We
but
thought
you use it with two. So you're using two different POSs?
Yeah. So we use Tabit at Prep and Pastry.
Okay.
We just loved the way they sold it to us, and it.
Were
it,
you using Toast before Tabit?
No, we were using Aloha.
Okay. Which I remember you said that in the last.
It
interview.
Was such a dinosaur. They just haven't kept up with the times. Aloha. Right. It's a tank, but I mean, gosh, getting parts up for tanks are expensive and hard.
Were you using the cloud-based option, or were you using the legacy option?
For the Aloha?
Yeah.
A legacy.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just, I mean, it's just, you know, with how much, you know, prior to COVID, we never did to-go food. After COVID, we're 20% sales of to-go. So integrating it with, you know, Aloha was way more difficult than having a Tabit or a Toast, because literally it just comes through the kitchen now. We don't have to sit there and add it in and, you know, whatever it was prior. It just made life easier. Okay. So those are the two things we're doing. We're also doing, you know, like via SEO, we hired a new marketing firm. We used to have it in-house, and we just, you know, as we've grown, she's still one of my best friends. She was my first team member ever hired in this company, Shannon. She moved down to, you know, to a small little town south of Tucson and is living the life, working at a cool little bar. And she was my old director of marketing. But as we've grown, we needed more SEO integration and, you know, just kind of.
So what are you using?
So we use, well, T-Grid Agency is our marketing firm, and they really do a lot of SEO analytics. I gotta be honest with you, I don't understand any of the stuff they tell me on my marketing meetings every Thursday. What I can tell you is we've seen a lot more butts through the doors. And what we also do is when someone's coming through the door, we ping their phone, and it recognizes that they've come back a certain amount of times. And we just send out thank yous, you know, birthday, free French toast on birthdays. You know, they visit every 10 times, say, hey, your next meal, your next meal is on us, just to say thank you for always being, you know, in here. Here at the market, it will be, you know, 20% off wine, you know, for so many visits. It just depends. You know, they've really kind of leveled us up on making sure we're marketing to people when, you know, we're not by having to post stuff. It's already set up pinging their phone.
So they're based out of Scottsdale, Arizona.
They are. They are.
And it's T-I-G-R-E-T-T, T-Grit?
Yeah, Tigrit, actually. Tigrit. I said T-Grit, didn't I?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
They, it looks like they don't work exclusively with restaurants.
No, I mean, they're like waste management. They've done a lot of different brands. Cove. Yeah.
I'm on their website right now.
Yeah. That's why. Yeah, they sold us. We're like one of their first main restaurants.
Well, I was
accounts.
Curious why Tigrit or Tigrit and not a, say, like an owner.com or a Spot Hopper or a, what's a pop menu or something like one of these things like that are geared towards restaurants.
Yeah, we just get FaceTime with them and we really get to kind of keep them on our brand, and we don't have someone having to do it. They handle everything for us, you know. Hey, we're going to do a New Year's Eve day bash. Yeah. You know, they're coming up with the ideas. We're saying, okay, you know, they're driving the car for us, I guess you can say. Yeah. And I really like that. It takes the stress off of my organization of having to come up with all those ideas constantly.
Right.
Now, we do get on the phone call with them every Thursday and say, this is what's coming up in our future.
How much does it cost you a month?
Well, depends on per location, you know. So we try to keep our marketing expenses under 2% through the organization.
How much total revenue are you doing through the entire organization?
You know, after Stravenue opens, I'd like to be north of 20.
20 million?
Yeah.
So you're doing 2% of 20 million, 200,000 a year on?
It's after Stravenue. So right now we're right around like 14, 13.
Okay. So 140,000 a year is your marketing
exactly.
budget?
Got it. Yeah. Which is, you know, people like, ooh, that's a lot. But also a lot of that is dollars spent into ads. A lot. I mean, more than, you know, I'd say about 50% of that
Instagram?
Meta. Yeah, a lot of Meta stuff.
Facebook.
Yeah, Google Analytics, making sure someone types up, you know, best brunch. We're popping up there with Snooze.
Yeah.
You can't beat Snooze on their marketing budgets.
Right.
But you can at least try to dance with them.
They've been on my radar now for like 6 years, 5 years, and I still would like to get them on the show. I know you're a fanboy. You flew out to Denver when you...
Yeah, I am a fanboy. Yeah. I am.
But I love that you are willing to say I'm a fan of this organization.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're probably one of my biggest competitions, literally across the street from your Gilbert location.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, so, I mean, it's no, our future, the future three locations I'm looking at prep are literally across the street from Snooze's.
Hey, you can take the Lowe's approach?
Yeah, yeah, just the McDonald's, Burger King approach, you know, whatever. It's just like, you know, they've already done all the marketing or the, you know, the research analytics, you know, kind of like, you know, demographics. Right. So why not?
But they're going to, how many locations are they
have? They have a shit ton
50,
now.
50, 60?
Yeah, and I used to like them a lot more when the brothers owned it.
So the brothers no longer own it?
No, they sold to a pretty large firm. They could still be involved, but definitely it's a...
I wonder if they still live in the Denver area.
They do. They do.
I'm going to try to get them. I have their emails, but I don't know if they're still accurate because they might not be with the organization.
Let them know that I'm still a fangirl.
I'm going to make sure you're best friends with them.
Yeah,
that's
man.
That's going to be my goal.
All I want is just a handshake once. That's all I need in my life.
Right.
Between them and... what is it? I think between them, you know, I've already met Renee in Seattle once, but I'd say Michael Chernow too. I don't even know if he does restaurants anymore.
Michael Chernow.
He's the meatball.
Oh yeah, I had him on the show.
You did?
Yeah,
dude, I'm a fangirl of him.
Is he the chef? No, he's Michael Chernow. Yeah.
He did the Seymour Seafood now.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, I'm such a fangirl of him. But now he's like all into like working out and he. I think he makes so much money off of like posting on Instagram
now.
Yeah,
he's an influencer now.
He's an influencer. He influenced me.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I get a lot of pressure to be an influencer. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah, dude. Get it going.
That life. I don't know if those people have souls, dude.
You know, I'm a. So when we opened in Scottsdale, I became buddies with a lot of big influencers.
Yeah.
JJ is one of my. I mean, I don't talk to JJ all the time. I'm name dropping JJ now, and JJ's the brother of the Bella twins.
Yeah.
And he's a super nice guy. And so JJ, I'd tell him, I was like, I don't understand how you do this. It just seems like everyone is always out to be your friend just to like get a post. It's just like,
it's bullshit. I mean, that I don't think people realize what that lifestyle is.
Oh,
it's not glorious,
but, they make a lot of money.
Yeah, but at what cost?
Yeah, I agree. My wife is friends with a lot of big influencers. Like, there's a girl named her name on Instagram is Attitude. I think she's got like 900,000 followers.
But they're also, yeah, sorry, keep going.
No, but it's just like, it's so, it looks from my vision, from my view, it looks so stressful to always be on.
Yeah. You know? You're always on and full of shit because they're usually having to promote something.
Yeah.
This is one, like, I love my sponsors.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm in a very good spot right now where I believe in the organizations that I'm promoting.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear is getting to the point where I become dependent on sponsorship to continue to do what I do. And I have to take money from organizations I don't love.
Yeah.
And that is my fear. And one of the reasons why I want to build up the community and to rely on my listeners to join the community and support the community to keep the show honest.
Yeah.
So I don't have to be an influencer, and I can be an influencer to influence people to cut the fucking shit with being an influencer.
I got to give a plug to my wife. My wife is, my wife just started like, She's a very smart nurse, right. Very, very smart businesswoman. She ran business better than I ever could have. She's like a holistic nurse, and she's starting to be, her followers are starting to grow pretty fast. I personally think she should be way over the amount of followers she has, because she has a lot of really good content.
Okay,
in her.
Okay, what's her name? I'm looking her up.
Wholesome Nurse. Wholesome, WHOLSUM. Wholesome Nurse.
Wholesome dot nurse.
Is that her? Isabella? Kate? No. Kate Aries. Type in Kate Aries. But what I'm trying to say is, it's crazy how much free shit she gets. It's like, and she's just starting, you know, and it's been super fun to watch, you know.
The Wholesome Nurse.
The Wholesome
She's
nurse,
got
my bad.
2,900 followers, and she's getting free shit.
Yeah, man. I mean, but she's got a lot of good information, and she sells like these programs to teach people how to live better lifestyle lives, you know? And it amazes me how you can make money off of the internet. And then now imagine someone that has, you know, 200,000 followers that's doing this shit. I mean, they are printing, but again, at what cost?
Yeah.
So but if it means that I can go buy a new Defender, if she blows up and I can get a new Defender, like a 1980s Defender, okay. I'm all about it, man. Right. I'll be a Instagram husband.
Go
all
sell
day.
Out, babe. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but what I do love about your wife's profile is that, I mean, with only 2,900 followers, the level of engagement, and like that's what I pride myself on. I've got about the Eclipse, I think 5,000 followers, not huge, but I look at the level of likes and views on my page relative to some other people in my space who have tens of thousands of followers, and it's not far off.
Yeah.
So like, I'd rather have fewer people who love the fuck out of me.
And her stuff is like, you know, like every day, like 5,000 views, or like she had a post the other week that was like, you know, it was some information about allergies.
That's impact, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's meaningful shit.
And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm actually surprised that she, I think people are just so wary to click follow nowadays because, you know,
you
there's
know,
so many.
Buy followers, and let's face it, we are sheep. We follow the herd.
I was telling her that the other day. I was like, you need to start advertising your page because people just click follow
because
when they see someone.
I want a Defender.
I want an 80s Defender. You know, customed out, black on black. It's not too much to ask for.
Come on, babe.
Yeah, come on now. Just imagine if I could just stay at home and just play pickleball and I just take photos while she's.
Be a, what do you call it?
Instagram husband.
A trophy husband.
Yeah. Sign me up.
I mean, you got the hair.
Dude,
you're halfway there.
Just give me like 2 more months. I'm going to send you a video. I'm going to send you a photo when the final form of my mullet.
This has been a lot of fun, man. I've loved Did we ever break for a second? We did break for a second sponsor.
Oh, we did.
Anything we haven't discussed today that you're hoping to get out?
No, you know, it's always just fun to connect with you. I really look forward to you connecting with Regan.
Yes, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m.
Dude, speaking of me fangirling, I drop Regan's name nonstop, and I'm almost like his like certified stalker here in town. So, yeah. You know, I'm excited to hear that talk with him, and I'm excited to bring you to Rolly's and Pico de Gallo and some other places here in town. We're going to go to the
we're
south
gonna be homies
side.
Before the end of all this.
Dude, like, we're going to go to the
homies.
I'm going to bring you to the Barrios.
Is it Mr. Bar or Miss the Barrios?
Oh, you're talking about Barrio Queen?
Is that the same?
That's Phoenix, but there's one called the There's one here called Barrio Barista.
Okay.
And they
we're doing
just,
this all today. Well, what's going on?
Huh?
When is this happening?
Dude, let's knock this out Monday.
All right, Monday.
Yeah.
Got it.
Dude, I'm telling you, we're going to go eat so much Mexican food.
Oh, I have Lauren Bailey on Monday.
Oh, man, Lauren.
We'll figure it out. One by
Yeah. You bring Lauren down to Tucson. Tell her to come check out the...
So I'm coming down here to Tucson?
Huh?
I'll come down to Tucson on Monday.
Who? You?
Me?
If you can.
I'll take the camper off.
Okay.
It kills my gas mileage.
Does it? Heard. Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you a couple questions before we say goodbye.
Okay.
What's one thing about your business, a value, a process, a system that makes you truly unstoppable?
You know, the team. The team makes us unstoppable. They are so personable. They're so excited. It's 100% the team.
And that was hire hard, manage slow.
Manage easy. Manage and, you know, I'm probably stealing a lot of lines Regan's going to tell you tomorrow, but, you know, whatever.
The mission statement is to change the world by inspiring, empowering, and transforming the restaurant industry. How have you personally transformed? Who are you today versus the man you were when you got started?
I seek to understand now. I seek to understand. When I first started, I was just such a restaurant hothead, you know, just, you know, rip something apart and ask questions later. Now I don't do that. I really seek to understand. And, you know, I'm so much more approachable and calmer and excited to learn, you know, about what we're doing or what someone's doing.
Got it. I think I was asking them. I can't remember when I started asking these questions, and honestly, yeah. I'm really proud of myself because when I listened to your episode, your first episode, 681,
yeah,
the show hasn't changed much, and the mission's still the mission, and there's a lot of consistency in what I've been doing.
It felt good. This is like still, yeah, it felt like with the first time.
Right, yeah.
I was way more nervous the first time.
Well, I mean, I couldn't tell, but I don't know. I think I might have asked this question, but if you got the news, you'd be leaving this world tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All the memories of you, your work, and your restaurants would be lost with your departure, with the exception of three pieces of wisdom that you could leave behind for the good of humanity and your legacy. What would those three pieces of wisdom be?
Three pieces of wisdom be? Oh, geez. I don't think you asked me this one. Three pieces of wisdom.
That's what I think all these questions that I'm asking started not long after I had you on the show.
Okay. Three pieces of wisdom. I would say one, I just said, you know, seek to understand, but so I'll say that one again. You never know what someone's going through, so fucking be nice.
Two.
And this is going to be cheesy, but there's nothing that a good cup of coffee or connection with someone can't fix. Mm. You know, it's just, and even if it's like a good slice of pumpkin pie, you know, just connectivity. So get off that social media. It's fucking you up.
Oh my god! I'm like looking on my spreadsheet right now. I just fucked something. Speaking of fucking up, I just like totally lost. I had everything lined up to be. This is who you called out last time you were on the show. But 100% agree. Get off social media. I feel like it's weird because we're told we have to be on it, but it's like we're destroying ourselves.
And if you're on it, follow my wife so I can get a defender.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are we people are going to fucking yell at me for this one.
So so this is the last question, and it's really going to be my North Star. This is really what I want to steer the ship of Restaurant Unstoppable. Who do you respect and admire? And I asked you this question the last time we were here, and the reason why I was pulling my spreadsheet is so I could echo some of those names that you told me the last time I was in town. The last time I asked, who do you respect and admire, you said, I need to get Nick Campisano.
Yep. Nick's amazing.
Kyle Nottingham,
my old partner chef. Yep. He actually just texted me a little bit ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you also mentioned Regan Jasper, which I'm making happen tomorrow morning. Yeah. And then Jose Mendez is the other big name that you mentioned.
He's so big now.
Yeah.
He doesn't respond to my DMs.
That dick.
Yeah.
Just kidding. All right. Please be a guest on my podcast. So who do you, anybody new over the past couple of years has really influenced you? I'm in Arizona indefinitely. People that you think are killing it. You know this market, Tucson, Arizona. Who's doing it right? Who's living the unstoppable core values? Who are the people we need to make an example of?
I would say John Martinez with Tito and Pep. I don't know the guys over at Bacanora up in Phoenix. I know of them. They're these young, up and coming kids that are just crushing.
How do you spell that?
Bacanora, Bacanora, I think. Bacanora.
Bacano.
No, Baca, Baca.
Yep.
N-O-R-A. Bacanora.
Bacanora. Look out, Bacanorans. I'm coming after you guys.
Yeah, Bacanora. And if I could put one more, I mean, Scott Kilpatrick's, you know, I mean, what a great guy to get on. The guy that created Raw Sushi, sold it to Benihana. Benihana just sold to STK. I mean, you know, he bought sauce from Sam Fox. And he's my, he's one of my favorite restaurant people. And I got to plug in one last name. You know, I'd say the Flores family here locally. Ray Flores and his ma are just powerhouses within the restaurant world, especially in the Mexican food sector.
Is that F-L-O-R-E-Z?
No, Flores. F-L-O-R-E-S.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ray Flores. Flores.
Yes, Ray Flores.
Look out, guys. I'm coming after all of you. I have a lot of respect for your opinion, and I know that these are going to be some great names. And this is really – this is the new normal. Of what I'm trying to do is, like, I want to talk to people, then I want to follow up and go deeper and deeper into these communities and really ring it out. So thank you for your support. Thank you for coming back on the show, man.
Of course.
I really have a lot of respect for what you're doing. It's always fun to connect with you. And this is when I say there is no questioning, my man. You are unstoppable.
I appreciate y'all.
Cheers.
Cheers.
There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to our guest today, Nathan Aries, for coming back on the show for a second time. And this is a great example of what I want the future of Restaurant Unstoppable to look like. One thing I've learned, it's not about the quantity of relationships you have, but it's about the quality of relationships you have. 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your guests. Focus on that 20%. And as we go into the future, there's 20% of people I've had on the show that I just really click with, that I think are people I want to develop relationships with, because I can see them scaling over time. And I want to follow up every 5 years or so to talk about what the 5 years look like and to get that granular, detailed content that I think you, our listeners, can really benefit from. And this is really the future of Restaurant Unstoppable. It's slowing down. It's going deeper. It's getting more vulnerable and encouraging my guests to become more vulnerable and to really, through vulnerability and sharing and learning, to like transform the industry. Like that's it. And I'm super stoked for the future. So as you're listening to this, I am in Phoenix. We are about to leave for Southern California, and who knows who we'll talk to. It's not up to me to decide who to make an example of. It's up to the industry, and I hope this approach of letting, really just giving the industry a platform to recommend people and to share knowledge is the right way to go. I feel good about it. And if you want to support this mission to keep this podcast honest, to help me on the road, and to help me build a team, we need your support. Spread the word about Restaurant Unstoppable. Leave those 5-star reviews on iTunes and Spotify. It's so easy and it goes so far. And join our community. Right now, we have Fred Langley going live every week. The CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro is there to just help you with your P&L, help you with your systems, help you with your numbers. And this isn't something that is like, that has anything to do with Restaurant Systems Pro. He's just doing this out of the generosity and the kindness of his heart. He knows that if you help people, good things, you know, if you do good things happen, you know, and we're trying to build this network of badasses. Special thanks to the people who make this show possible. Thank you, Jared Parisi with the Samadria Podcast, for your copyright editing and support. Thank you, Callum Miola, our community manager, and so much more, really becoming like the director of operations, keeping me in line, the Eric manager. We should start calling our community an Eric manager. Thank you for being in our corner. And that's it for today. Until next time, peace out.